Before we get started with today's episode, I want to acknowledge that taking care of ourselves is vital for our success. While we're all busy and trying to build that GPS to get us to whatever is next, I didn't want us to lose the fact that taking care of ourselves is important, because if we're not there for ourselves, we can't be there for each other. Today's conversation is powerful, uplifting, and motivating to help put a spotlight on your own health and wellness and share with you how you can take a little bit better care of yourself. I know you're going to love my conversation with Jonathan McLernon. And before we get started, I just want to remind you, if you haven't had an opportunity to pick up a copy of my book, Your Mid-Career GPS, Four Steps to Figuring Out What's Next, please go to Amazon and pick up a copy and kindly rate and review it. Your rating and reviews help make a world of difference in terms of letting people know how this book has helped you and helped you navigate your career transition. Also, don't forget to join my private Facebook group, Your Mid-Career GPS. And obviously, don't forget to subscribe or follow on your favorite podcast platform, this podcast, because today you're going to hear a wonderful conversation that I had with Coach Jonathan McLernon, his powerful story, and how we can all just do a little bit better job of being more compassionate with ourselves as we build our mid-career GPS. Hi, I'm John Nerrell, and welcome to the Mid-Career GPS Podcast. If you're feeling stuck in your career and overwhelmed by what steps to take, I can help you. As an executive and career transition coach, I help my clients prepare, position, and promote who they are and what they do to show up and find a job they love or love the job they have. It's time to start building your mid-career GPS. So let's get started. Hello, my friends. Welcome back to the podcast. Now, so many episodes have focused on how to make your career transition, improve your leadership presence, and feel as if you get to go to work because you love what you get to do. But building your mid-career GPS is about increasing job satisfaction and making your impact. However, sometimes that can come at a cost of your work-life balance or not giving yourself enough time to take care of yourself. Many of you who are listening are heart-centered leaders and professionals. Your default is to put everyone first. And when that happens, you just tend to put yourself on the back burner. Perhaps your health has suffered because of it. Well, today is the day we're going to change that conversation here. As mid-career professionals, work and life are demanding, but let's take some time to focus on our health, me included, my friends. My guest today is Jonathan McLernon, the head coach at Freedom Nutrition Coaching. Jonathan began his career as a nanotechnology researcher, a marine engineer in the Navy, and a globe-trotting English teacher, visiting 45 countries on 5 continents. And then he went and ran a nutrition and supplement store. Like many of us, Jonathan lost himself along the way. He went through serious trauma while living in South Africa and saw his weight balloon to 328 pounds as he grappled with PTSD, binge eating, and medicating his trauma with food. His journey has taken him through self-discovery and awareness, and he came up with this conclusion: diets suck. Meaning that they suck the life and the joy out of it all. Through his coaching practice, Jonathan helps his clients focus on their success through nutrition, training, mindset, and building a community of like-minded people so they are not alone on the journey. Jonathan, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you for that intro. You've got a great voice for radio. So I just wanted to say that, you know, if coaching, I can't imagine coaching not working for you because you're so awesome at it. But if ever you needed a second career in your mid-career, I'd say radio has a spot for you.
Well, thank you. Somebody had suggested I try doing voiceover work, but I never pursued it because this is just a lot of fun. But I will absolutely, now, if I'm ever looking for a side hustle or an encore career, maybe that's something there, because more than one person has said it. I thank you for that. I am so excited to talk to you today. We connected through the power of LinkedIn and online and everything. And you are a conversation we have not really pushed on this podcast. So I am glad you're going to help us with this and start it off. But Jonathan, before we get started, I ask my guest this question to start off. Tell us what you wanted to be growing up.
Well, and that's going to depend on the age I was, because if we go back to early childhood, it was a dump truck driver. And that's because I had a neighbor up the road who was a dump truck driver. So when I was 3-4 years old, he'd take me up into his big dump truck and, you know, maybe he might've just needed a job around the corner or something and let me push the lever to like dump the load. And, you know, it for when you're 3-4 years old, like that leaves an impact. Wow. I want to drive this big piece of machinery and do something cool like that. I know I had my Tonka truck in the sandbox and things like that. But when I was about 9 or 10, I think I decided I wanted to be a chef. And so I got really into learning how to cook. I didn't realize that I actually, you know, prepped myself for bachelor life quite well by learning how to cook at that age. But that never did pan out. And it's probably a blessing in disguise because now I'm here doing what I do now. And I absolutely love it.
Nice. Who cooks more in your household, you or your wife?
It used to be more her, but now we have a 5-month old son. I do more of the cooking. It was typically like if it was just us eating, I would do the cooking. And if we had guests, my wife, Michelle, she was going to do the cooking because typically her presentation was a little bit better than mine. She's a little more artistic. I'm like, I think now my cooking falls into the like one pot, one dish. It's now all about efficiency. And yes. So whereas hers is about presentation. So maybe that chef career wouldn't have worked out for me. But yeah, when you have a 5-month old and they're running a business and so on, efficiency is key.
I can only imagine, and obviously a lot of things that my listeners can relate to as they're listening to us today, because they're juggling a lot.
Yeah.
Work, home, family. Some are taking care of elderly parents.
Yeah.
And dealing with that stressor and everything like that. So where is home for you? Let's bring that in as well.
Yeah. So I live in Red Deer, Alberta. So for American listeners, I'm just north of Montana, about 6 hours drive. So I'm just east of the Rocky Mountains. I'm about 2 hours drive away. So I have just a gorgeous backyard. Mm-hmm. A lot of the brochures you'll see about Canada will show pictures of like Lake Louise and Banff and Lake Moraine and things. And these beautiful like teal colored glacier lakes and this incredible mountain setting. That's kind of my backyard. And so I feel pretty fortunate to live where I do.
Nice. You live in a beautiful part of the country, obviously, and I wanted you to come on today because your story is incredible. We heard a little bit about it in the intro, but what takes you from all of these jobs and globetrotting and 45 countries on 5 continents and everything? And then at that point you go, I'm gonna open up a nutrition and work in a nutrition and supplement store. How does that happen?
Yeah, by random chance. So I would say this, for a very long time, I ran away from who I am as a person. And I say that because I'm a very heart-centered empath. I have a lot of love for people. I'm the kind of person that will hug everybody I meet. I'm just a big teddy bear. If you look at me, I'm 6'1", like 250. Like I'm a pretty big, strong, strapping guy. But I'm really just a big teddy bear. I love people. But for a long time, I really struggled with my identity, in a sense, like what it means to be a man and to be masculine. And I felt that having all the big emotions and feelings that I had were something that made me weak or that weren't part of being a man. And I don't really know where that came from. You know, I've got wonderful parents. They're amazing. They have a loving, happy marriage and relationship and things. But so for a long time, I was really engaged in a lot of hyper-masculine type behavior. Whether it was like racing motorcycles, powerlifting, listening to heavy metal, that kind of stuff. But it really wasn't who I am at my core. And all of that kind of came to a head. You know, we touched on a little bit going through trauma in South Africa, and I don't want to make that the focus of the interview unless your listeners would benefit from it. But going through an experience where I nearly lost my life, that shook up my entire reality. And so in that moment, I contemplated everything that mattered to me and everything that didn't. And it's pretty interesting sort of what comes out of that. And a lot of the things that matter, that I thought mattered, they really didn't, including the opinions of so many people. I was like, all I really cared about at that point was my wife, my brother, my mom, my dad, and wanting to see them again. And so that started a journey back. And it wasn't a short journey back, but kind of this journey of discovery. And it was a painful and difficult one where I had to work through a lot of these old belief patterns that I had about who I am as a person. My whole identity was being challenged. Or maybe what it was, maybe I could put it this way. It's almost like a golden statue that was covered in a layer of concrete, and all that hard layer of concrete was being chipped away to reveal who I actually am. And so it was in 2017 when an amazing coach really recognized something in me. And he didn't coach me the way that I thought I should have been coached, because I was working on my own weight loss journey still. And it was when he asked me the question, Jonathan, if you made a list of all the things you love and value, how far down that list do I have to go before I find your name?
Whoa.
That one stopped me cold, because I was like, I'm not on that list. It wasn't even that I'm near the bottom of the list. It was, I'm not on that list. And that's the question that I said, the question that changed my life, because he brought something into my conscious awareness that really wasn't there. So here I was running now the nutrition and supplement store, and that happened by chance. A friend of mine had started a business, and was having a falling out with his business partner. I'd started helping him on the side. Turns out I was a really good fit. I have a chemistry background, so as well as a marketing background. So supplements were kind of a natural fit for me. But I was really struggling and throwing all of myself into that business and helping it recover and trying to rebuild it and so on, that I was losing myself in the process, and I was losing the weight battle. So when he asked me that question, it shook me to my core. And you know, later I think I just went and cried by myself, and I don't really know what the crying was about. I think it was just maybe mourning and grieving. All the times I'd mistreated myself, I'd not cared for myself, I'd put myself last and so on, realizing that if I'm going to be healthy, I can't live this pattern anymore. And so I started the process of trying to say, well, how do I put myself on the list? Well, that involved challenging these beliefs that I held about myself, that I wasn't good enough, that I wasn't worthy, that I had to always try to prove myself to other people. If I didn't always just give, in an analogy, if I didn't set myself on fire to keep others warm, that everybody in my life would abandon me. So my brain was catastrophizing in a sense. And so letting go of that belief and realizing that when I invested in myself, when I took care of myself, that everyone else in my life benefited. My business benefited. My career benefited. Like, everything got better when I started taking care of myself and even putting myself near the top of that list, and sometimes even first. Now, you know, I have a 5-month-old, and sometimes his needs come first. And that's okay. That's the process of being a parent. But I'm definitely top three between myself, my wife, and my son.
So thank you for sharing that with us. I mean, yeah. You stopped me in my tracks as I was listening to that, because it was just so powerful, because I'm thinking about the people who I work with, the people I listen, and all transparency, myself in this conversation, yeah. Right? And that question about where do you put yourself on the list? Can you peel back the curtain a little bit and tell us, like, how does that process unfold for you? And you can tell the difference, because I say process and you say process, yeah. Right?
Yeah, that's a beauty of English language.
Canadian, I tease her about that all the time. Right. So. So can you peel back the curtain and tell us a little bit more about that process of just putting yourself on the list to eventually moving yourself up toward the top of that list?
Yeah. And I think I have, I like to speak in pictures or in analogies, because I think it when we create a visual around a concept, it's more likely to stick with us. And so let's just go back and say 100 years ago, if you went to a circus, you'd see probably a circus elephant, and you'd probably see him tied to a fence post. It was maybe 4 feet tall at best. And you'd look at this magnificent, you know, 5-6 ton beast and go, why is it not just ripping that thing out of the ground and walking away? Mm. And it's because when that elephant was young, They tied it to that same fence post. And an elephant at that time was not strong enough to pull away from it. And it would try and try and try until finally it gave up and said, I'm not strong enough to break free. So that belief got implanted. Elephants have very good memories. That belief gets implanted in the elephant. And the elephant doesn't let go of that. So as it grows bigger and stronger and more able, it still has this sense of identity around, I'm not good enough, I'm not strong enough, I can't do this. And so it just stays tied to the fence post. And now we could take that and make it kind of like, in human terms, imagine a landscaping stake. It's like maybe a 1x2, little orange ribbon at the top, you know, little point at the bottom, you tap it into the ground, maybe 6 inches or something. And your leg is tied to that landscaping stake. And that stake could represent a belief about yourself, a type of your sense of identity that you're connected to, that you feel like you can't break free from. And anybody else, an outside observer, would come along and say, well, why don't you just like literally pull it out of the ground and walk away? Because it's been there from the time that you weren't strong enough to break free from it. And it's kind of crazy to think about it like that. Now, I say I don't do psychological archaeology. It's quite a mouthful. In other words, I don't go back and try to correct people's past, but we use people's past to help inform the present behavior. So once it's informed, we can now view that behavior or that belief through a lens of compassion. We now understand why it's happening. And so the first step is to confront that belief. So for me, the stake that I was tied to was I'm not good enough and I should hide in the shadows. So the truth is I have a brilliant brain and I can't take the credit for it. I got it free of charge 39 years ago. So I really can't take the credit. But, you know, my dad's got an encyclopedic memory and my mom is incredibly creative and talented that way. And I seem to get both of those. And that's a huge blessing. But for a long time, I was scared that if people saw my brain, if they saw what I was capable of doing, they would reject me because I was sort of conditioned to hide in the shadows. You know, when you're the smartest kid in the class and everybody makes fun of you. And so you just start hiding and going, I'll just sort of settle in for the middle of the pack, you know, or the teacher says, hey, you know what, let's let somebody else answer because my brain was just going like this. You know, it's just grabbing answers one after another. And they're like, okay, let's let somebody else answer, you know. So I learned this pattern of behavior to hide in the shadows, to hide myself, to not let people see who I was and what I was capable of. So the first step really is to confront that belief, to challenge that belief that I'm not good enough. And it could be something really, really simple. You know, an exercise that I give my clients very often is stand in front of the mirror and pay yourself a genuine compliment. Not a fluffy sort of ridiculous one, but one that's grounded in truth and reality, but a real genuine compliment. And then sit with that feeling. First time I did that, it was really uncomfortable. I was squirming and I wanted to get away from that mirror. I wanted to stop looking at myself because it was like, it was confronting a belief I'd held about myself for so long. And our brain really doesn't like when our identity is challenged. But you repeat that little by little. It's like you take that first step and pull the stake out of the ground. That's the first time you acted against that belief that you held. And then every time you repeat an action that is contrary to that old belief, you take a step further away from that place that you were stuck. And as you take more and more steps away, eventually that chain breaks and falls away. And now you're free from that old belief.
I work with so many people, Jonathan, where that whole notion of I'm not good enough is a big part of the conversation. Whether they hire me or they don't, right? Yeah. There is a point about in terms of how we show up professionally, personally, and what that looks like and how it manifests itself. And when people are promotionally focused, when they're looking to level up from, say, manager and they want senior in the title, or when it's right. Director and they want to move to VP, there is oftentimes that event that happens where they get knocked down in the whole hiring or interview process.
Yeah.
And it's always interesting as a coach, is what we know, is we listen very intuitively and curiously that the thoughts about I'm not good enough just come in. Like I interviewed against all these people and they told me I wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
Well, is that really the truth? Yeah.
And you know, in one sense, I don't know if it's I'm not good enough, but it's like maybe you weren't the right fit for the position at that time, but that doesn't devalue you.
Yes.
It doesn't diminish your skills or abilities. So the ability to reframe that, I think, is really, really powerful. But it's so interesting because this is exactly what happens as we go through this process of change. Like eventually we're going to hit a trigger event that's going to dig up that old belief and it's going to shine a light on it. And an outside observer would look at this person and go, wow, you're high up in this company. You hold this elevated position and status in the company. You have people under you. You have people looking up to you. And yet, and you have to present a confident front and a capable front to those people. And yet all of a sudden you start to feel this sense of imposter syndrome. What if they find out? What if they find out that I wasn't good enough? Man, imposter syndrome is a real thing. And yes. It's a powerful thing. And people at the highest level of the society still deal with this.
When we talk about dealing with things like imposter syndrome, I think it's important for us to talk about coping mechanisms.
Yeah.
And for you and for me included, there was a point in time where food really was that coping mechanism.
Yeah.
And using food as a way to kind of forget all the pain and stuff that's what's dealing with. In your experience, Jonathan, why is food that easy go-to for people who are looking for that escape or that coping mechanism?
Probably because of how they were raised. Truthfully, and this is not a knock on anybody's parents, but when you think about patterns that we learn and they get passed down from us, you go back a couple of generations and like my grandmother, she lived through two world wars and the Great Depression. So when you had a little bit of good food, you shared it. It was a form of hospitality and love and connection and warmth. Or even think about being a kid and it's like, hey, you were good today. Have a cookie. Mm-hmm. Well, you, at the very, very impressionable developing stage in brain development, that pattern gets established. When I'm good, I get food. But it kind of goes to more than that. Because as adults, let's look at our modern food environment. So we have companies that are manufacturing food products and such in North America, such an abundance of food products that we could probably feed every North American like 4,000 plus calories per day. They wouldn't be nutritious necessarily, but that much is available to us. So now these companies have to figure out ways to sell what it is that they've produced. And that's not a bad thing. You know, business is business, but now they have to convince you. And so you have something like Coke, open a bottle of happiness. Like they made that campaign for a reason. Now it's not true. It should have read open a bottle of dopamine because that's what drinking Coke will do for your brain. But what we're doing, you look at McDonald's. I remember the one commercial sticks out in my mind. A couple of construction workers in New York on their lunch break, they've had a hard day, they're sweating, and they sit down and they pull out the Big Mac and one guy flips it upside down and takes a bite out of his Big Mac upside down and they smile at each other. Like this has nothing to do with logic at all. This is like creating impressions in our emotional, in our primal brain that this is what this food represents. Comfort, connection, friendship, family, love. And so the moment that we start to experience uncomfortable feelings, our nervous system is wired to avoid pain and to seek out comfort. It is the most ubiquitous, readily available 24/7. You have apps now. You can get 7-Eleven junk food delivered at 3 o'clock in the morning. So it's so available and then it's so inexpensive because there's so much of it being produced. Mm-hmm. And then you tie that into the messaging, whether it was from our parents giving us a cookie for being good or McDonald's telling us that Big Mac is actually about friendship and human connection, things like that. All of that just means that it's the first thing that comes to mind. I'm feeling uncomfortable. Boom. I'll eat a Big Mac or I'll eat a cookie or whatever. And then as soon as we do that, our brain just learns something. I feel uncomfortable. I eat a cookie. I feel better. And then boom, do that 3 times. You now have a habit.
Mm. And it goes without question that when food is a coping mechanism, and there are others, we're not going to talk about them on this podcast, right? But when food's a coping mechanism, and especially in light of what we have seen within the last year and a half, as Absolutely. The world shut down and those people who were able to work remotely did, and Zoom calls became about dress shirts and sweatpants or you know, blazers and shorts. I'm doing the same thing. Don't worry about it.
I've got my collared golf shirt and I've got my blue $5 sports shorts from Walmart.
Yeah. I have my blue Amazon shorts on as well. I mean, we're laughing because it's become very familiar, right? And we've heard the things about, you know, the pandemic 15 or the COVID 15, you know, we've gotten very comfortable in yoga pants and sweatpants and all those kind of things. But now for anyone who is unhappy with their weight, and they're like, oh, I need to do something. And they look at all of the programs that are out there and the influencers that are online and such like that.
Yeah.
Your website, your messaging, I talked about this in the interview, have a very compelling mission, which is that diets just suck the life out of us. Talk to us a little bit about that kind of awareness and mindset and how you help your clients through that.
So a diet is kind of like putting yourself in a straitjacket and says you have to fight against yourself. And this is why they never work, because you're not dealing with the root cause of the behavior. Overeating is a symptom. Carrying excess body fat is a symptom. It's not the root cause. And what a diet says is, well, you're just eating the wrong foods. Let's put you in the straitjacket. They're not. And to be fair, a lot of people aren't qualified to actually do the work of dealing with the root cause. And so most people, it's like that's what they know. But you can only be in a straitjacket for so long. But because human beings desire independence and autonomy and being empowered, and putting yourself in a straitjacket feels very disempowering. Mm-hmm. And so I want to empower my clients. So I don't just want to, you know, tell you to eat more vegetables, because you've heard that a million times. This is not an information problem. We live in the age of Google. This is an implementation problem. But let's understand why there's a gap between what we know and what we do. And it's because the brain is the driver of our behavior, but really the biggest driver of our behavior is not our logical brain. It's not the prefrontal cortex. The prefrontal cortex is that part of your brain in your forehead, it's literally the front of your brain, that deals with long-term consequences, logical thinking, weighing out the pros and cons of doing something. But much of our behavior is driven by an older part of our brain, the primal brain, the emotional brain, the animal brain, lizard brain, whatever you want to call it, where logic doesn't come into the picture. And so we treat this like this is a logical problem, and it's not. This is not a problem of you knowing that vegetables are good and, you know, eating too much junk food is bad. That's not the problem. The problem is you have a brain that's been taught, that's been wired, and even a nervous system that's innately wired to seek out comfort and avoid discomfort, and here's how you do it. And so the straitjacket doesn't address it. So when you quit the diet because you can no longer deal with it, you're like, this just sucks. I can't keep doing this because it sucked all the joy out of my life. Then you go back to your old patterns. You go back to your old behaviors, your old habits, your old coping mechanisms. And then the weight comes back, and it comes back faster than you realized. And then you start to feel discouraged. Like, what is wrong with me? I'd lost all this weight. It was working. It's like, it wasn't working. Just, you can tie yourself in, you know, to a tree and lose weight. That doesn't mean that's a solution, right? That's a desperate attempt to avoid what's really causing you to do what you do. And you talk about coping mechanisms. So one of the things that I want to do is I say, let's bring our unconscious or subconscious behaviors to our conscious awareness. It'll be a bit uncomfortable when we do that, but it's awareness is the first step to change. If we become aware of what we do and why we do it, then we can create change. Now, my role as a coach is to create a compassionate space. Now, a compassionate space is not a get out of jail free card. It doesn't say, keep drinking that bottle of wine because you had a hard day. That's enabling. That doesn't help people move forward. But it's saying, I will not judge you. I will not create a character or a moral judgment against you because you did something that was harmful to your health. But I will help you, and I will ask the questions to help you understand your behavior. And with that awareness, we will start to create the change.
Just kind of sit with that for a moment, right? Yeah. I mean, that is so much about, I mean, whatever coaching somebody does, right? If anybody out there hires a coach, that's exactly it, right? It's not about enabling. It's about helping people increase the awareness for why they do the things that they do and then helping them make decisions on what those kind of changes may look like.
And every change involves a trade-off.
Yeah.
So maybe one of the more harmful messaging that we've sort of been conditioned societally to expect is that, like, you can do anything and everything. And it's like, it's not true. Everything does involve a trade-off. Now, we treat that, again, like it's a bad thing. It's not. But ultimately, it's like, okay, you can cope with your stress by eating a bag of chips. And that'll feel good in the moment. Or you can, and the spillover effect of repeating that behavior obviously is weight gain. Or you can say, let me figure out what's really going on here. What's stressing me out? That's going to be uncomfortable, but you can now deal, you can deal with that discomfort and kind of put that behind you. Because essentially, food is about burying things. It's about trying to change the channel in our head in the moment, but also about burying things and pushing them back down and pushing them down. When really we need to bring them to the surface. I like to say we need to metabolize them so we can put them behind us. Now, I just want to cite one example here to help people also, because you'd work with very capable, very intelligent people. People that are skilled, they're in positions of responsibility, positions where people are looking up to them, and so on. So I wonder if they experience this, where they go, like, I'm a project manager, you know, I'm a senior manager, I'm this professional that manages a team of 40 or 50 people. Why can't I manage my own life?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's like, you only have so much capacity in your brain, and you're using a lot of that to do exactly what you excel at. But it's not a guarantee that just because you have those skills in this area of your life that they transfer directly over. It's also that, like, this is two completely different skill sets in a sense. Project management isn't the same thing as dealing with behavior change.
Oh, so well said. And the judgment and the punishment.
Yeah.
And the vitriol that gets self-inflicted.
Oh, things we say in the privacy of our own thoughts.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah. We would never talk to a colleague, or let alone a 5-year-old kid, in the way that we talk to ourselves sometimes.
And why do we give ourselves permission to say that that's okay?
Yes. And
the question I love to ask people in a very sincere way is, how is that working for you? Mm-hmm. What does the evidence of your experience tell you? Yeah. It's not snide, but it's like, let's look at that. Has beating yourself up worked? Is it really working? Is it how you want to live the rest of your life? Probably not.
Right.
So we need a more compassionate approach.
So what are some of the things that you do in terms of building a community that you have or created to help people have that more compassionate approach?
It's, in one sense, it's fairly simple. I keep, for example, I have a clients only Facebook group, and every day I have people express one thing they're grateful for. And that's about challenging. We have a hardwired tendency to seek out negativity and threats to defend ourselves. That's a very primal thing. And so when we consciously seek out something to be grateful for, We are confronting that. We're basically giving ourselves a break from the negativity and reminding ourselves that, you know, we have so many things to be thankful for in our lives. And it's scientifically validated that gratitude will rewire your brain to be more happy. Now, if we become happier, that doesn't mean that life is perfect or life is bliss. But if we become more content, even in our present circumstances, we're less likely to turn to food as a coping mechanism to change the channel in our head. We're more likely to show ourselves compassion and understanding in a difficult circumstance. And I think about one other thing here, and that is that I mentioned earlier that our nervous system is hardwired for comfort, for avoiding pain and seeking comfort. But there's another part of us that often we don't talk about. And depending on your belief system, let's just say your soul is wired for growth. It's wired for development and for learning and for bettering. And we have this yearning and longing inside of us for this. And so there's this dynamic tension between the two forces, the primal brain saying, stay comfortable, and the soul saying, no, you're capable of more, of doing more, of being more. And the process of change is uncomfortable. And you have a nervous system that wants to be comfortable. And that's the tension that we all grapple with in whatever stage of life that we're in. I want to be comfortable, but I want to grow.
Jonathan, that is so powerful. And I'm not saying that as a cliche. I'm saying that because it's heartfelt, right? Yeah. So many things that you are talking about today are resonating with the people who listen to this podcast and who are looking to stretch and grow, and oftentimes just don't give themselves the kind of space and grace that they need because they're focusing so much on everybody else. So I want to thank you for spending some time with us and sharing this message a little bit. We could talk for another 2 hours. we really, really could. But being respectful of time and everything, as we start to wrap up, what advice would you give for someone to help them build their mid-career GPS, given in light of everything we've talked about today?
I go back to awareness is the first step to change. And so it's very likely that you want to move forward, but something stops you. Eventually you get to a point in your career where something becomes a stumbling block and stopping you. That awareness, and maybe I could say awareness with compassion, is really the what will help you to create change and growth. And so we want to bring these unconscious or subconscious beliefs to our conscious awareness and just see them for what they are. It doesn't make you a bad person. It doesn't make you a failure, no matter how successful you are. Everybody has these. And, you know, it's so much easier to wrestle with our demons in the light, especially in the space of another compassionate professional who's, you know, my demons are out in the open. I too, even knowing everything I know, still have my struggles, mm-hmm. but I show myself so much more compassion and grace as I move forward and continue to grow and develop myself.
Nice. Thank you for that. So Jonathan, look, I'm willing to bet there are people who are going to want to follow, connect, learn more from you, maybe even work with you. So give us the rundown. Where can people connect with you, and tell us what you offer in terms of helping people with their journey in this regard?
Well, one of my favorite, ebooks that I've produced is called Crush Your Cravings. And we'll put the link in the show notes, but I'll spell it out. You can go to nofndiets.rocks. So it's nofndiets. It's a play on freedom nutrition, but nofndiets.rocks/crush-your-cravings. And you can just enter your email address and name, and I'll email you a copy of that. Nice. And what it does is it helps you to get an idea of the compulsive behaviors. Why are you doing these things? And gives you four really powerful tools to break free from that. And so that starts the process. Anybody wants to connect with me on a free consultation call where we just, you know, it's about getting a sense of, hey, where are you at? Where would you like to get to? And am I the best person to help you? And if I am, then we'll talk about working together. But I don't know the link off the top of my head, so I'll have to send that one to you for the show notes, where people can book a free, no obligation consultation call where we just have a chat like two human beings. Nice. I think that's a lost art. It's just talking like two human beings and saying, you know what, if I can help you, and if I'm the right fit to help you, yeah, then we'll talk about working together. But if not, I'm going to point you in the direction of someone who's a great fit for you.
I couldn't agree more. Follow that the same way. So that's why we click a little bit. What else do you have?
Freedomnutritioncoach.com would be my website. And truthfully, I say to people, follow me, you can friend me on Facebook. My handle is Canadian Nomad, but with only one N. So Canadian OMAD. So yeah, because I love traveling. And my wife's from Australia and we love traveling around the world. So I often treat my personal profile a bit like a blog where I share my thoughts, my experiences, the things that I've worked with people on and so on. And so that's like a great place to follow me. I do have a YouTube channel as well. And I think if you just go to nofndiets.rocks/YouTube, that'll lead you to my channel, because YouTube actually gives me this long string of characters and numbers that I'll never remember. So I love the fact that I have this, it's called a vanity link. And it just redirects, right? But it's no fndiets.rocks, no fndiets.rocks. And that was a joke. It started this hashtag no fndiets, but it's really kind of a cheeky rejection of this mentality that I can create permanent results from temporary efforts. It's like, you can't. In order to transform your health, you must create permanent change. And that requires a shift in identity, a true transformation. That's what I want to help people do. So that's why we say no fndiets. So no fndiets.rocks/YouTube will lead you to my channel where you see a little more content like this.
We will make sure that all of that is in the show notes. And yeah. I certainly hope everybody just finds a way to connect with you somehow. I think you're awesome. I love what you do. It's been a pleasure just getting to know you a little bit before this episode and during, and I'm sure afterwards we will continue to keep in touch. But Jonathan McLernan, thank you so much for spending some time with us and helping us build our mid-career GPS today.
And thank you so much for the work that you do as well. You do wonderful work. And I think sometimes as the host, maybe we forget to acknowledge that, you know, you're showing up on a regular basis, putting out this valuable content to genuinely help people. So thank you for giving me the platform to share my own experience. And thank you for the work that you do as well, helping people just become better professionals.
Thank you so very, very much. All right, my friends, as we wrap up, Jonathan gave us so many wonderful things today. So take some time, open up some space for compassion for yourself in your life. And remember, we build our mid-career GPSs one step or 1 mile at a time. And how we show up matters. Make it a great rest of the day. If you enjoyed today's episode and don't want to miss another one, follow on Apple Podcasts or wherever you usually listen, and kindly remember to rate and review. Visit johnnarrell.com to download your free job search tracker and other free mid-career GPS resources right there on my homepage so you can start building your mid-career GPS. Come join my private Facebook group at Your Mid-Career GPS and join an amazing community of people like you who are all working to figure out whatever is next for themselves and their careers. And don't forget to connect with me on LinkedIn and follow me on social at John Narrell Coaching. I'll see you next time.